So what is the neuroscience of vocal imitation? Sophie Scott's a neuroscientist from University College London. Sophie, you brain scan people who do these kinds of things to work out what's going on in their heads.
Yes. I mean, entirely because I was interested. I wanted to know what they were doing. So I have done a handful of sort of individual cases of people who are voice artists to try and get to grips with what's happening when they change their voice.
Because, of course, we have circuits in our brains that know the words we want to say. We have other circuits in our brains that control what the muscles of our faces do and our diaphragm and vocal cords do. But that's to make your own voice. So put me in the shoes of someone trying to change their voice. How do they do that?
Well, two different things seem to happen. So if you take people who are not professionals, so people, you know, just me trying to impersonate my mum, for example, what you see, and we've actually done this as a proper study, is you can actually see in their brains, they're thinking about the sound of that voice and they're trying to get there. They're using like an auditory target to try and change their voice. One of the things that is interesting about voice artists is they don't seem to do that. So a couple of people I've looked at, when they are changing their voice, what they do is they drive visual and sensory motor parts of the brain. So they seem to be thinking about what people look like and how they move in order to change their voice. And that's something that you don't see in non-professionals. It seems to be a completely different approach to what somebody should sound like.
Well, how does it change then when someone goes professional and becomes Rory Bremner, who can do anybody, as far as I can tell? What does he do differently?
Well, do you know what? Hopefully one day when I've got more than a handful of people through the scanner, I'll be able to give you a better answer. But one of the things does seem to be a completely different approach to the voice. So people who are non-professionals, they're thinking about sound. The professionals seem to be approaching the voice almost like a whole body phenomenon. They're thinking about everything that somebody does. They'll talk about what people's eyebrows are doing and how their hands are moving, things that do not affect what you sound like directly. The other thing that anecdotally I have noticed in the voice artists I've worked with, the impressionists I've worked with, is that they very frequently are intensely musical. So perhaps they are simply approaching the voice as a musician might their instrument, rather than somebody thinking about speech and what speech should sound like. And I think that's what everybody else is doing.
Now, when you say the real pros, they adopt the other mannerisms of the person they're seeking to imitate, do you get an effect then where your eyes read onto your brain what you want to see, and therefore you create the sounds in your head because you see them behaving like that, so you almost hear the real person? And so you're fooled into thinking they sound more like the person than they really do.
Well, you definitely see that. I mean, there's lots of YouTube videos of people doing amazing impressions, and very often they really help that by having labels that appear. So I think, well, that's slightly guiding us, you know. But I think it's even more basic to that, because I've noticed people will do that even if they're doing a radio recording. So they're doing something for which they will be recognised only by their voice, but they're still moving their body differently. They're moving their face differently to get to that impression. So I think it is a very basically different way of approaching altogether how you sound.
And thinking about the neuroscience and the anatomical nuts and bolts of how we do this, how does your voice actually work and enable you to produce all this different range of sounds and try to sound like somebody else?
Well, we don't often think about it this way, but actually the voice is an unbelievably complex musical instrument, and it's operating really unlike pretty much anything else that you can find in nature, with the exception of some songbirds. So we've got the larynx, which is your voice box, and that's where you're making a sound. So if you put your finger on your throat and go, you can feel a vibration, and that's the source of most of our speech and sort of uses of our voice. And then you shape that with your articulators, which are your lips, your tongue, your soft palate at the back of your throat and your jaw, and it's as if you're playing a musical instrument where you are continuously changing the timbre by how you're moving the articulators. That's the sort of template for how we talk. But then within that, it's still unbelievably flexible. So you can do all sorts of different things with your larynx. You can really vary the pitch of your voice. You can vary how you vibrate your vocal folds. So I'm talking right now with what's called modal voice, but I could also talk with a breathier voice, which isn't actually entirely coming in.
Like larynx. The woman off MasterChef.
Yes. Or I could speak with a creakier voice. And creaky voice, that's really valenced. Some people really, really hate it. And actually in the UK, it's rather a posh way of speaking, and lots of posh people have got very creaky voices. So it's all that's kind of coming in from, you know, changes right down in your larynx, and then you know, you've got all these different things that are happening up at the in the articulator. So some people, my old boss in Cambridge had an extremely nasal voice. He's just using his soft palate differently. I have another colleague who has quite a different tension in her jaw when she's talking. And that's all the little ticks and stuff that's going in there that's kind of cueing you into who it is that you're talking to. And one of the things that impressionists do is kind of pull all of that together and start to almost put it into a caricature. But I think the basic thing to bear in mind is just how flexible it is to start with.
Well, that was a hard act to imitate, wasn't it? Thank you very much, Sophie Scott from University College London, and before her, Mayim Bialik from The Big Bang Theory. Thank you to our other contributors as well this week, Sean Cubitt and Anna Abraham.
And now to finish, it's time for Question of the Week, and Claire Armstrong has been learning about unlearning.